Hey, back here on Downtown, and it's time for us to talk a little baseball. To do so, we're joined on the telephone by the Maine native, the longtime voice of the Baltimore Orioles, Gary Thorne. Hello there, Gary.
How are you?
Just delightful, thank you. What's new and exciting in your world?
Home runs, lots of home runs.
Yeah.
Trouble is, they're coming on the wrong side of the ball this club. But good. Back in play, and we can survive another marathon 11 o'clock a.m. game. We'll be all set.
There you go. My goodness, poor Chris Davis. The nation is captivated by the struggles of this guy. And what is it now, 0 for 53?
Yeah, they just keep piling up. He's, you know, it's set the new record. Fortunately, at home at least, while the fans, there was a lot of booing on the opening series at home, but in the last series against Oakland, I mean, there weren't many fans there, number one, but the ones that were actually supportive of him, cheered for him, just tried to be positive. I mean, you know, you hear people say, you know, somebody making how many millions of dollars a year on this long contract and is setting the new record for both plate appearances and at-bats without a hit. How can you be sorry for him? And in part, that's true. But the other side is, he is human.
Right.
He is a baseball player, and he wants to succeed, and it's not working. And, I mean, it's miserable for him right now, just miserable.
You have got a lot of very talented youngsters on this team, and it's certainly a youth movement. But I look around at guys like Alberto, who's off to a good start, Nunez, Richie Martin, David Hess. There's some good up-and-coming talent on this Orioles team.
Well, they hope so. I mean, this, you know, everybody's, most people have defined this, you know, as a rebuilding year. I don't even think it's that. I think it's an inventory year.
Mm.
They're really trying to find out what they got in the system. Who do they think they can rely on in the future to be an everyday player for an extended period of time, you know, some 3 or 4 years with a ball club. And they, with a new management, with a new GM and a new manager and coaches and everything, it's really trying to find out who are they and what can they do. And some of the guys are off to good starts and some aren't. You know, you're going to get time to show whether you can stay here or not, but you're not going to get a lot of time. It's been made pretty clear by Mike Elias, the new GM, that they want to know what the heck's going on. You're going to get your 100 at-bats or your 1 month up, and if you're not producing, you're probably going to go down, and somebody else is going to take your place and have their shot at it. So I think it's going to be that kind of year, and it already is for the pitchers. I mean, they're falling down like, you know, leaves in the fall. And I don't know if they've got enough pitching. This keeps up. They're really going to have to dig deep into the system to have guys to throw in games.
Well, the Red Sox pitching hasn't exactly been setting the world on fire so far. It's been a rough start for everybody. Chris Sale, 0-3 with an ERA of 9. Eovaldi giving up home runs like he's a batting practice pitcher. This team's struggling like few world champions have struggled out of the gate. I don't know if it's a hangover or what. There's talent there, without a doubt, but something's not right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the fun part of this business. Now everybody gets to try and find what this is. The numbers tell you in raw figures what it is. They're not hitting the baseball the way they were last year. They're not hitting the strikes that are down the middle of the plate. They're tentative at bats, which is hard to believe that this team is as good as it's been, but they have been. And then Sale, there's something wrong. I mean, I'm convinced, knowing nothing more than anybody else, but just watching him pitch, there's something wrong. I mean, that arm is not where it should be. The velocity's not where it should be. The slider's not where it should be. I mean, I just think there's something wrong, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's got to take a DL stint to try and figure out what the hell's going on. And otherwise, I mean, pitching is just at such a premium that when you've extended your guys, in this day and age, extended doesn't mean much, but when you've gone through the postseason, and you haven't had a lot of time for rest with all that goes on and celebrations and everything. I just think the arms, they just aren't there. They aren't ready to go. And trying to get your arms as a staff ready to pitch once the season has started is really hard because nobody's taking pity on you, especially not the Red Sox. And if they can pound the hell out of you for a series, that's exactly what the opposing teams are going to do. So they're just going to have to find their way. I mean, they're too good. This team is, Red Sox are too good with all the offensive players and defensive players they got, to have the struggle continue. But you say that, and every game counts. And even after the first month, you don't want to be double digits behind the division leader. all of a sudden, no matter how many months are left, the climb gets a lot harder.
And a lot of teams struggling out of the gate. The Yankees dealing with some big injuries. Gary Sanchez placed on the injured reserve list earlier today. And then teams like the Rays off to a tremendous start at 10-3. The Mariners playing some outstanding baseball as well. Do you see any teams surprising people and making a bid for the playoffs this year?
Well, I mean, I think Seattle's going to be a big surprise. I think they're legit. They can't keep the pace up they're at right now. But they've got some real good players, and they've got a decent pitching staff and a pretty good bullpen. I think Seattle will be a stay team. Tampa Bay, I don't think, is a surprise. I mean, they have been a good team all along. They were a good team last year. And they've gone to the kids. They put a lot of younger kids, half dozen kids are playing really well right now. But Major League Baseball will get a book on them, and those numbers will come down a little bit. And as usual, in the course of a season, it'll even out. And the teams that have the talent are the ones that are still going to win. And those that have developing players are going to come somewhere in the middle of the pack. But I think Seattle and Tampa Bay will be two really good clubs who are going to give people some surprises. I like both of those teams. I really like Kevin Cash. I mean, he's a spectacular manager, I think, in doing what he's done, because they break new ground every year as to how they build the ball game and put it together, starting with the openers as pitchers. But it's going to be a good race. And the longer this Eastern Division stays flipped, the longer it's upside down, then the more exciting it's going to be, because making up ground, as any baseball fan knows, is not easy.
When you talk about changing the way teams operate with starting pitching, Red Sox trying to do things differently with a bullpen, not really a closer by committee as much as going with your best arms at the most critical time of the game. Do you think that could catch on? And could you see Major League Baseball maybe going back in time to the way it was when you didn't have a guy designated for just one inning and only in a save situation?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Rich, I think it's already happened. I just don't think a lot of people are calling the spade a spade. The Orioles don't have a closer. Michael Givens is the one, if in fact there's anybody, but the way he's being used, Brandon Hyde brings him in seventh, eighth innings when the game may be on the line, when there are runners on base, not coming in top of the ninth, clean inning. I think all of this is necessitated by the fact there aren't enough pitchers to go around. There just aren't enough pitchers. And you've got to use the guys you've got who can get outs at the moment you define as the key moment in the game. And yes, the final three outs of a ball game are always tough, but a game is generally not won or lost in the ninth inning. It's won or lost in the middle. And that's where you're going to use, that's where Major League Baseball now is starting to use its best pitchers out of the bullpen. And matchups become even more, we're going back to matchups. I mean, we're seeing guys closing, not because they're closers, but because they match up well against that particular point in the lineup in that game. And I think we're going to see more of that. I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Do you like some of the...
just not enough.
Do you like some of the rules, Gary, that have been implemented and will be implemented next year to shorten up games?
I don't know that... I mean, right now there's no shortening. There's nothing that's happened for this year that does anything. I mean, they've reduced the visits to the mound by one. I mean, that's mox nix. And asking the players pace the game, you can't ask the umpires to pace baseball games, because they can't. If a player wants to step out of the batter's box or a pitcher wants to step off the rubber, they're going to step off. And you can't start calling balls and strikes because of it, because the players will go into a turmoil. You just can't. So the players dictate how the speed of a game is going to go. Now, next year, when we get into this reliever, a pitcher's got to face three guys when he comes in, unless it's the end of an inning, maybe that'll speed it up a little bit. But I saw a study, I think it was in The Athletic, that was just done on the first 160-plus games, only 57 games would have been affected by that rule. And it only would have saved some 1 minute or something so far in the season. So, I mean, I'm not sure that's going to matter very much either. I like that rule. I hate this constant bullpen traipsing back and forth and managers to the mound. That does slow the game down, but I'm not sure this rule is going to have, next year when it comes into effect, is going to have a very dramatic impact.
Gary Thorne with us here on Downtown. Are we looking at some labor unrest in the not-too-distant future?
I think so. Because of this offseason and all of the free agents, the Kimbrels of the world who are still sitting out there, why? if you look at this from both sides, from a business side with the teams, they are trying to get as many wins as they can, spending the least amount of money. And in this day and age, it's called tanking, but I'm not sure that's fair. When you've got a team like the White Sox or the Orioles or Kansas City, and you're looking at the teams you're playing against, you are not going to compete some years. You know it. You just know. You don't have the talent to compete. You've got to build. Why are you going to go out and spend a lot of money on free agents when those free agents, the one or two you get, are not going to make a difference in your season? You're not going to do it. So you just fill the blanks. You get a couple of guys who are regulars, and you fill in the blanks with guys who play but aren't going to win a championship. And I think more and more that's what you're seeing year in and year out. Teams are making the decision well in advance that, look, we're not going to compete for any championship or division title this year, so we're not going to spend a lot of money. Let the free agents sit there. And when we get to a point where we think we've got enough of a core group, then we can go out and get one or two or three free agents where we've got to spend a lot of money, and they can then put us over the top. I kind of think that's where we are. Now, what are the players going to think about that when it comes to the next collective bargaining agreement? I think there's going to be a real tussle over that sort of approach.
I thought of you a couple of weeks ago. We had a really wonderful conversation. No, this was...
really bad thing?
No, a great conversation. No. Art Chamsky was on with us.
Art! Oh, my God.
And talking about his wonderful book on the 69 Mets and the reunion when they went out to California to get together some of the teammates with your good friend Tom Seaver.
Yeah, it's a very tough time. Tom's, you know, he's going to be, I've seen him, we go out, we visit, and I saw him a few weeks ago, we went up to the vineyard, and it's set in, it's dementia. He still knows who you are and what's going on, and we had a wonderful time, and we joke a lot and fool around a lot, and he still can do that, but the short-term memory just, it isn't there. Mm. So it's very tough. It's very tough for the family. And it's very sad. You see somebody who had that much, so much life in him, and he had done what he wanted to do. He got out there, he got the vineyard going, and that's, he loves it and still goes out. He's out there with the dogs pruning in the vineyards. That's what makes him happy at this point. And, you know, just hope it kind of stays at some level and doesn't get any worse.
Yeah, have you read Art's book?
I have not read Art's book. I've only read outsurfs of it that are where I've seen the paper.
Yeah, it's not read it yet. It's terrific, and it's emotional, certainly, and it's very poignant when they all get together. Bud Harrelson, when they went out there a couple of summers ago, was also battling dementia, and yet they dealt with it like old friends and like athletes would do, by ribbing each other and just having a good time and some laughs. And it was apparently a very good day for Tom Seaver when they were there. And it really is a wonderful book.
Oh, you're good. I've got to pick that up and see it. And I'm sure it was. I mean, those kind of reunions are what these guys live off at this point in time. And they can still do that, even with the dementia setting in. They still know and remember. And it's great to see that. I mean, it's heartbreaking and heartwarming all at the same time.
When I posted on social media that you were going to be on the show, several people reached out with various messages.
Said they'd never listen to your show again.
There were a couple of those.
Cutting, turning off the radio.
Yes. Let's see. No. Matt reached out and said, is there any way Gary could get out this weekend to broadcast the Frozen Four?
No, I cannot. I wish I could. I love doing the Frozen Four, but that is down the road now, I think, come and gone.
And a woman named Felicia said, say hello to my former lawyer.
Felicia? From Channel 5?
Yes, indeed.
Oh! What did she say?
She said, say hello to my former lawyer.
Oh, my God. God love her. I have not seen Felicia in a long, long time since working at ABI. Well, that's great. Hello, Felicia.
Yeah, she's doing great. She and Toll down in southern Maine.
That's wonderful. Good, good, good.
Just got news today that Tim Throckmorton is retiring. Last year, Steve Martin got done. Yeah. You're still working. Yeah. I'm still working. It's,
What's wrong with this picture?
Well, there. Yes. Or is it that we figured out there are worse things to do than to be talking to people on a regular basis and get paid for it?
There you go. See, now you've gone and done it. Now you told people the secret.
Sure.
Magicians aren't supposed to do that.
Was I not supposed to do that? Oh,
no.
Man.
This is work. You've got to tell people how hard this is. Getting up and getting in and doing the research and getting on the air and preparing and all of that. How difficult a job this is. How can I possibly go on with this? And then you go on.
And then they see Hale.
God love them. Honest to God. On the air, I cannot believe it. I just, it's wonderful.
Well, we were talking about this. You would know better than I, perhaps. I believe he has done a morning show in this market since 1957.
I think you may. What did he do when he came out in 1952?
He was there, but Johnny McCrae, Johnny Rise and Shine, was doing the morning show. I mean, George was, I kept doing another shift and doing some TV, but I think he took over the morning show in 57.
57?
Yeah.
I knew he came out in 52, and I knew he was there. And I remember John McRae, by the way, was the one who hired me at ABI.
Oh, wow.
That's my original boss.
Wow.
I remember John was doing that. But you're right then. It's been since 57, and he's been on the air since 52 in the same market. Oh, my God.
So I've got another generation to work just to catch up. Suddenly it does sound like work.
Suddenly it sounds like I'm not going to be retiring anytime.
Well, you know, those of us who have younger children may not have a choice.
That's exactly right. College ahead. Oh, my
God. My choice. My wife's got the easy choice, college or good nursing home. Well, I think we know which way she's going.
We know which way you're pushing.
Exactly.
Brutal.
He only needs one meal a day. He's fine.
Ah, let him go. You can find the refrigerator.
That's it. Take him a while, but he'll get there.
He can grab it.
Gosh. Life's problem solved.
Well, I see how hard this job is. I now realize why it is so difficult for you, just talking to you.
Exactly.
Reminds me of what a tough job you have.
Darn right. Gary Thorne, who has a tough job at times, carrying the weight of the Baltimore Orioles and their struggles. We wish you well this weekend down at Fenway.
Thank you.
And
great talking to you.
You bet. We'll catch up with you again as the season rolls along.
All right. Be well.